Hello and welcome to the Fishing Guide Podcast. Yes, this is like Knights of the Round Table, but in this case, there's only two knights, but the table is round, Steve. So that's right. Tell us who you are, Steve, and what you do.
All right, I'm Stephen Barden, the director of the Major League Fishing Fisheries Management Division. I'm a professional biologist that travels with the league, does conservation work across these great lakes that we get to visit.
There you go. And so really getting down and dirty, because that's what you guys do. Your job is to keep the fish alive, basically, kind of in a way, and to promote better habitat.
Yeah.
You know, is that right?
We have like four pillars that I kind of work under. The first one's research. The second one's education. The third one's fish care. And the fourth one's fisheries enhancement. So you touched on two of them really well there. You know, Major League Fishing is diverse. Over 300 events a year. Some of those are catch, weigh, and immediate release events.
Right.
Others are five fish limit events. So we've got our live release boats that travel to our five fish live weigh-in events.
Right.
So we have fish care that occurs there. We get to the Bass Pro Tour, fish care looks a lot different because it's fish care for about 24 seconds.
Right.
Yeah, so my job is very diverse. I really build angler, agency, and industry partners to come together and do conservation work whenever we visit a fishery.
I know we were just at a seminar, introduction to a bubba scale. So tell us, like, the introduction of bubba scales and having someone in the boat weigh the fish.
Okay.
How has that really changed? Probably when you first started, there was nothing like that, was there?
Right. So the digital era is upon us.
Right.
You know, even when Major League Fishing first started, we were using this great scale for the time, very accurate scale. But if it got wet, it would short out, and then you'd have to get a new one.
Right.
You know? So Bubba came with some technology. We worked on the backside, behind the scenes, to really, make this scale do what Major League Fishing needed it to do, which was identify what species you caught, what did it weigh, provide a GPS location so we can have some verification.
Right.
That you're not out of bounds, things like that. So we have an onboard official on the Bass Pro Tour that can collect that information with their eyes and then put it into the score tracker.
Right.
We've been doing that great, for over 14 years now.
Wow.
On the Bass Pro Tour for 5 years now.
Right.
That system requires that second person.
Uh-huh.
This year on the Tackle Warehouse Invitationals, we don't necessarily have that person collecting the data. What we have is the Bubba Scale collecting that data. And with the Bubba Scale.
And all the anglers had the Bubba Scale. Or had an opportunity to have the Bubba Scale in their boat, right?
Absolutely. So last year, we soft launched it, where our anglers were using it on the Tackle Warehouse Invitationals, not using it on the Bass Pro Tour. This year, all of our officials have it on the Bass Pro Tour, and every angler on the Tackle Warehouse Invitational has it.
Wow.
So if I'm an angler, and I'm competing in a traditional five-fish event,
right,
with a live weigh-in, I'm culling fish throughout the day. I'm going to take my best five to the weigh-in.
Right.
As a biologist, all I ever saw was the five-fish bag.
Right, yeah.
There's five, they're alive, they weigh 22 pounds. That's what I know.
Right.
So then I could divide that out and say, well, you know, the average weight is just over 4 pounds. That's what I would know.
Right.
Now with the Bubba Scale, what I know is how many fish were caught throughout the day to make that five-fish bag.
Right.
So now I know how many fish are we culling, where are we catching fish, things like that. So, Brad, I'm able to actually know what's happening on the fishery much in the same way that I know it on the Bass Pro Tour.
Yeah, and that's everything but weight. I mean on length on
everything
that fish. So you're getting a lot of information.
You're getting a lot of information.
Do you share that with state fisheries? Is that where that information goes?
Yeah, so my staff, what we do is we take every Bass Pro Tour, well, any catch, weigh, and immediate release event,
uh-huh,
and the Tackle Warehouse Invitationals starting this year.
Right.
And we compile spreadsheets of every single fish caught in a day.
Wow.
And then we have an infographic that comes from those spreadsheets that delineates the data into digestible pieces with graphs and things like that for what do we catch. So from the Bass Pro Tour, we look at in a 6-day of competition somewhere between 1,500 to 2,000 fish catches if it's a southern event, and a northern event, it's probably 2,000 to 4,000.
Right.
If I was in a state agency position, it would take me 10 years to catch 2,000 adult-sized fish electrofishing for a fishery.
Right.
So in a week, our anglers can really collect a lot of information about where the fish are, what do they weigh, get some population dynamics. So yeah, we collect all that, and I have a shared drive with every fish chief in this country,
right,
all the biologists for any major reservoir you can think of, where I'm sharing that information usually the week after the event happens.
Wow, that's pretty fast.
It's the technology age. We're here.
That's right. So talk about the four pillars that, that you...
So whenever we talk about the four pillars, research, well, just the data we just dove into.
Uh-huh.
That's more research than we could have even imagined we could do at the Fisheries Management Division. And we're able to do that every single event.
Wow.
We do have the educational pillar where I'm taking content and creating it specifically for the Major League Fishing website to help anglers become better stewards, become better users of the resource. And then our fisheries enhancement, that pillar really focuses around the habitat restoration we do with Minn Kota. So Minn Kota, the last three seasons, has joined us in the Fisheries Management Division with the idea that whenever Major League Fishing visits a venue, there is some sort of habitat restoration that we could do on that venue.
Right.
So every reservoir in the United States, for the most part, was built between like 1960 and 1980.
Right.
It's the height of reservoir construction. Whenever you build a dam, they would flood the habitat that was there, a lot of standing timber, things like that. Well, 40 years later, that's deteriorating. So we're losing habitat on our reservoirs. Whenever we have a dam, our reservoirs are technically collecting sediment all the time. So they're getting shallower. Some of them are becoming more nutrient rich. Some of them are becoming nutrient deficient. So all these things are happening. So as a league, how do we visit a venue, showcase how great it is, collect all the data,
right,
and not make it better? We have to make it better, right?
That's, exactly.
That's part of our cause. So we do the fisheries enhancement where we put in artificial fish habitat.
Uh-huh.
So artificial fish habitat, we use a partner, Mossback Fish Habitat, that uses recycled PVC.
Right.
It's a rigid PVC that doesn't have plasticizers. They do this really great manufacturing process to remove all of the microplastic waste from every cut and drill and everything they do to that product. So whenever it comes to us, it comes as clean PVC. It's recycled, safe for the environment. And we go and we put them in specifically in places where we know fish are going to be released in a live weigh-in event.
Right.
So we know that then whenever we put that habitat in, it's going to last forever. It's not going to decompose in any way. And it's going to allow fish that are released in a traditional format event somewhere to recover. So Major League Fishing live release events where we're weighing and immediately releasing them, we're not moving fish.
Right.
But for all the rest of our events, we are moving fish. And typically, whenever we look at a reservoir, there's one or two boat ramps that 90% of the tournaments come out of.
Exactly.
And
when
fish are released during one of those events, our research for the last 30 years has shown that those fish, depending on the reservoir, will move somewhere between half a mile to 5 miles and stay within that area for 1 year.
Yep.
Well, that makes it pretty easy for me to talk about where should I do habitat restoration. If I know 90% of our events are coming out of one boat ramp, I can draw a circle within 3 miles and say they're within this area somewhere. Let's put it in there.
Prairie Creek on Beaver Lake, there you go, 5 miles. People would always ask me, where do I need to go fish? And I go, within 5 miles, if you want to get a check, just go there. That's where the percentage of keeping, keeper, largemouth or smallmouth or spotted bass are going to be.
Yeah, and then you'll have a kicker every once in a while and you'll place a check.
That's right.
And that's the truth of it is, we're all great stewards. You wouldn't be a tournament angler if you didn't, number one, enjoy the environment, enjoy fishing.
Right.
And you want to protect it for the next generation. So if you're going to do that, we want to compete on these fisheries. We know that putting a fish in a live well is a stressful event. If it wasn't stressful, we wouldn't every once in a while see a fish not make it.
That's right.
Stressful in some way. Live wells keep improving to the point where those fish are starting the recovery process in the live well.
Right.
Then we go through the weigh-in. The weigh-in is another stressful event. We put fish in a bag. There's some times when they're dry, they get on the bump board. There's some events there that could be stressful events. Then on all of our events, they go to a live release boat. So now there's a recovery time there. We're doing everything we can as anglers and the league to ensure that we're releasing fish alive.
Right.
The part of the process we were missing is where are we going to release them? Now we know we're releasing them in places where there's habitat for them to recover in.
Right.
So with the Minn Kota's partnership, it really showcases how an industry partner like Minn Kota cares about not only you catching more fish, you getting there safely, but also your fish making it back to the water and continuing for the next generation.
So we're here at the championship and at Red Crest, and tell us, you have a booth. You have like things for kids to do in the booth?
Yeah, you know, typically I have something very kid-centric. I love teaching kids.
Right.
We've done things with Boy Scouts.
I saw that, like last year.
Last year we had Boy Scouts actually earn a merit badge in my booth. I put them through an educational process. So this year I wanted to do something a little bit different. We get a lot of questions about the habitat that we use. So I built a habitat project within a booth.
Okay.
So now you as a fan can walk through and experience what a fish is going to do. We have little cutouts of bass and bluegill, and we've got the kids going around, and they're actually experiencing where would fish live in this habitat.
Okay.
You know, because you look at a project or a brush pile or something like that, and you try to visualize where a fish is going to live. With some of the new technologies, we're able to see that on our depth finders.
Right.
How do we get kids to understand that? Well, this is what I'm trying to do in my booth. I'm trying to get them in to feel it, touch it, play with it, so that we can start building better anglers.
All right. Here's the $10,000 question. It's always the question. Forward-facing sonar.
I love it. Yeah, I'll.
You're giving it a thumbs up.
No, I'll give you what the scientific perspective is right now.
Okay, we'll take that.
That'll be a good one. There's two papers that are available through scientific. So the process of science, basically, somebody does an experiment, they publish a paper, that paper is reviewed by their colleagues. If those colleagues approve of the research, everything's sound, then it's published.
Okay. So
there's two published papers.
All right.
One of them is on crappie and one of them is on blue cat, both by the exact same scientists that led the experiments. They focus on those species, Brad, because those are species that are easily exploited because people that catch those typically harvest them.
Right.
So if we're going to see canary in the coal mine, it's on fish that are continuously harvested.
Right.
We're going to lose size classes quickly. We're going to notice a decrease in the population. So this biologist, basically to summarize the papers, took a group of anglers, some with forward-facing technology and some without, and they went out and they fished for the day.
Okay.
And all he looked at was how many fish did they catch, what was the average size, how quick did they find fish, and whenever he looked at the data, the anglers with forward-facing sonar found fish faster. But at the end of the day, they did not catch more fish, and those fish did not have a greater size. But here's the biggest point of those papers, the last conclusion he had. He asked everybody a final question. Do you think that the people with forward-facing sonar caught more fish? And both the anglers with the forward-facing sonar and without thought that forward-facing sonar allowed the others to have the advantage. So they thought that forward-facing sonar made a difference when it didn't actually make a difference in his data. Now, I think some important points there is exploitation. As a bass fishing community, we are a non-consumptive community.
Right, yep.
The harvest of bass is at an all-time low and probably is detrimental in many situations because we need some harvest. But as a non-consumptive population, the exploitation of those fish is very low. So as long as we understand fish care and we understand putting together the proper tournaments and all the habitat components, and we're doing everything we can as an angler and as a league to release those fish alive, there is real no there's really no exploitation or loss of fish. So for state agencies and for researchers, they're looking at it, and bass are not their priority because we're just not going to exploit them. For species like crappie, it's the magnification is really on those because we can exploit those populations. The other thing we do in our data collection this year on the Bass Pro Tour, because I have the official and I can tinker with what they're collecting, is we collect every single fish that's caught. Was the angler utilizing forward-facing sonar or not?
Okay.
So we've had two events this year so far. Stage one at Toledo Bend, 76% of the fish were caught using forward-facing. The second tournament was at Santee Cooper. We had 16% of the fish caught using forward-facing sonar.
Right.
So even in our own data, it's starting to show like sometimes it's really important.
Right.
Other times it's not important at all.
Yeah.
As this plays out over the next couple of years, we'll learn a lot more. You know, it's one of those things that as long as we're not exploiting the population, state agencies are going to stay away from it. They're really more concerned about people that are consuming a lot of fish.
Yep. Well, that takes us to Tackle Time. Tackle Time, sponsored by Pico Lures. Pico Lures has a complete line of hard and soft baits, ones you can catch bass on with or without forward-facing technology. They also, And they also have terminal tackle, so if you're out there just bobbing with a minnow for a crappie, they got that too. So check them out at picolures.com. Steve, if they want to find out more information about what you're doing, where would they go?
Go to majorleaguefishing.com. Right there on the main page is the big Fisheries Management Division logo. It's blue, it's round, FMD. Click it, and you'll see the microsite.
There you go. Appreciate you being on the show. Make sure, like I always say, make sure you keep your hook sharp and your lures in the water.